I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host 2 hours a day from 9 to 11. Usually on Thursdays, we have our Freedom and Prosperity in the second hour, have a representative from Americans for Prosperity in. They cannot make it today. The team is all out setting the brush fires of economic liberty across the state of Mississippi, so they're not able to come in. So I've got full 2 hours today. This kind of sent me into a bit of a panic. I'll be honest with you. It takes a long time to prep for this show. If you've noticed, if you've listened to the show before, I do some pretty deep dives into things. I bring clips, I bring articles, I have sources, all kinds of stuff. And I usually am working late on Wednesday nights, and so AFP gives me a chance to really only prep for a one-hour show. Now I had to prep for a two-hour show, and I was worried that I would not have enough material for today's show. This is like something that wakes up a radio show host in the middle of the night in the cold sweats. Some people are really scared of public speaking. Obviously, that's not really a concern of mine, but it is daunting to come up with 2 hours of material every single weekday. So when AFP gives me a break, it's kind of nice. But then I ran across, just as I was worried about whether or not I'd have material to cover in today's show, then I ran across, I am trying to think of a good title for Joe Biden. He's so bad. He's obviously mentally incompetent. He's corrupt. He's terrible for this country. I'm struggling to find. I want to settle on something pithy to refer to this thing that is in the White House, and I haven't come up with it. But I ran across his speech yesterday to the UN. Just about every speech. I think I'll take the just about. Every speech that American presidents have given in the past 30 years, something like that, in front of large bodies, including the American people, is so full of crap and hypocrisy and lies. All of them. Yes, all of them. That it's difficult for somebody who has a real distrust and dislike for the political class to even listen to. I've told you, I don't like State of the Union addresses. What do I care what some speechwriter who's trying to spin the record of the current inhabitant of the White House? What do I care what some speechwriter has to say? These things are always terrible. Now, I've said that for 5 years now. I'm not going to watch a State of the Union and then break it down and talk about how inspiring it was. And, that is not me. But Joe Biden is here today, and he brings a special level of disingenuousness that I cannot ignore. I'm going to have to do this. We're going to get into his speech in a little while. We're going to play some of it. I'm going to have to do it live time because I could not watch it last night. I got about a minute and a half in, and I was so disgusted. And this was at about 11 o'clock last night. I'm somebody who struggles with sleep to some degree. I've got some bad habits, which includes computer screens too late, not winding down properly. I know how to fix these things, and I still don't do it, so I struggle with sleep. Just that minute and a half of the speech that I saw started getting me wound up. I had to turn it off. I said, I've got to find some way to sleep, and this was not going to help. So we will listen to Joe Biden's speech together today. I may be able to get an hour's worth of material out of the first minute and a half of his speech. It was so disgusting. Now, I will say this. This was a little nice. In a positive sign for our country, and I'll check the numbers when I pull the clip up later, in a positive sign for our country, I pulled up, there's several different videos of the speech on YouTube. This is where I went to go find it. There were about, of the clip that I watched, which is the full UN speech, was about 26 minutes. So they had the full drug cocktail going in Biden. And from the first minute and a half that I saw, it still is not working. I can only imagine how much more they are having to do intervening with him pharmaceutically to get him through. You know, every month that passes, this man loses a little bit more cognition, a little bit more mobility, a little bit more energy. He is in rapid mental decline. So you would imagine that even during the course of his relatively brief up till now, even though it seems like forever presidency, you can imagine they are having to continually raise the dosage of things to get him through a speech. It doesn't look like it's working. But in a positive sign for our country, so I pulled up this one YouTube video of Joe Biden's UN speech, and as of last night, there were about 36,000 views of this video. Of the 36,000 views, there were only 700 likes. Now, this is actually very, very good news, as much as I'm just so divorced from social media and engaging out there in the digital world that it's a little lost on me. But I understand when something is not popular. And, you know, Joe Biden, I think, is the reason they turned off the dislike button on these things. But out of 36,000 views, only 700 likes. Now, the comments underneath this video were some glowing ones. So I guess these few people, this 2% of people who liked this video, they felt the need to, you know, there was somebody who said, what an inspiring speech and what we needed right at this time. I mean, just brainwashed, brain dead stuff. But that's pretty good. Pretty good if only 700 people bother to even just click on a little thumbs up out of 36,000 people. Very few people right now are buying the load of crap that Joe Biden is trying to sell. And that is both domestically and internationally. I cannot imagine. It was just the first minute and a half I've seen. It was cringeworthy. Thinking about the rest of the world listening to this madman, this demented creature, and the things he had to say, the rest of the world is not buying this. And I don't know how long Americans have understood this. This goes for Biden, Trump, Obama, Bush, Clinton, Bush. The abusive nature of the U.S. federal government around the world, people don't like us, not because of our freedoms, but because we're bullies and hypocrites, mostly bullies. And so people are not buying our crap anymore. This is not a good thing. We have wasted any leadership we could have had by being a good example for the world, and instead have just evolved into a bully state, a real thug on the world scene. That's not hating your country. That's hating your government. So anyway, he is going to give me some material today. We're going to break down. I'll see how far we can get into this speech. As I said, I may be able to do an hour just on the first minute and a half that I saw. But anyway, we'll take a quick break here, come back with some quotes of the day. And the Libertarian Party came out with a thread. I keep challenging you. You know, the Libertarian Party has been taken over by the Ron Paul faction of it after being terrible for years and years. I challenge people to find things that the Libertarian Party is saying right now with their official platform on Twitter that you disagree with. I'm telling you, if you want to lead a populist revolution that puts power back in the hands of the people and not the powerful and the politicians, the Libertarian Party is really your only choice. I know people will reject it. They can't win. They're spoilers. Alex Jones has come out as anti-libertarian, and he thinks the Libertarian Party is a cancer. Alex Jones now perfectly content with the two-party system. He says it's the best we can do. I wholeheartedly disagree. We'll get into that when we come back. Stick around. You know, it was only about 2 weeks ago I was talking about the 10-year bond here in the United States. What an important bond that is for all kinds of different for the credit markets, for people borrowing money, for people taking money and putting it into bonds rather than into stocks. And it was about 2 weeks ago I was telling you, if this thing goes over 3%. That is usually a sign that the markets, you know, look out below in the markets. It was 2 weeks ago. I was talking about the bond. It was teetering right around 2.9%, 2.8%, and then it got up to 3%. It is now at 3.6%. Now, this is very underwhelming to a lot of people. 3.6%. So it's up 0.6%. What's the big deal there? It's a big deal. And the bond market is not supposed to move this way. Something is about to break. Something is about to break in our economy. And we haven't had our layman moment yet. We've had our two negative quarters. We've had a stock market swoon here. We're all suffering from inflation. But they are still sticking to this everything's going to be fine thing. This is the same thing that CNBC was telling you right before Lehman Brothers collapsed. I don't know if you remember. As an economics nerd, I was paying a lot of attention to it, and I remember when they came on and announced. I mean, we were hours away from the entire credit market seizing up. That's no trucks on the road. I mean, it was poised to be a very serious thing. Of course, they did a bailout, which I believe they cannot do this time, or maybe they can do it, but it'll spike inflation. So we are very close to some things breaking, and I got a story about that in the real estate market I'll get to in a second, too, but I got a caller on the line. Caller, are you with me?
I am, Mike. This is Robert. How are you?
Good. What's going on?
Well, you know, you were just talking about this. But the president said inflation has stabilized. There was, the, you know, it only went to 8.3%. It's not like it went to, you know, a big spike. There's no big spike.
Right. He's thrilled it's just tapered off at 8.3%. All of us know out here that's half of what it actually is. That's the government inflated, numbers.
You know, what else they don't talk about is, that's 8.3% over a year ago that month.
Right, and that was
a year ago. If you look back a year ago, it was up 5%.
Right
over. So
yeah, I've talked about that a lot. We're in the compounding phase now, where we're actually compounding these things. Right, right.
We don't even want to talk about. Well, you know, last year it was up 5%. Now it's up 8% on top of that.
Right. And I don't know. I think people really believe that inflation is, you know, is kind of like a speed bump, and that you go up and then you come back down to where you were. That's not the case. Even the Federal Reserve is saying, if we can do this right, we want to get inflation down to around 2 or maybe, and now they're saying maybe 3%. Well, again, that means that all of the higher prices are reset and they'll still increase by 3% a year. We're not going back. We're not going to have negative inflation. Now, we may have some deflation if we have a serious, deep, dark recession, which is a very real possibility. But, you know, these prices with any level of prosperity in this country, with a functioning economy, these prices are never coming down. They are where they are. And it's just the pace of acceleration from here is the only thing they're looking at.
Well, just think how bad this would really be had another president gotten his way and they had negative interest rates for a while at one point.
Right. We could have accelerated this whole thing. Yeah, I know.
By
exactly.
God, we would have a 12 and 15% government inflation, which would be a 30% realistic inflation.
Right. But the stock market would have done great during his term. And that's all that mattered, was taking credit for how great that phony stock market, that bubble stock market, was doing.
Well, what I was really calling about, and I was just listening to you talk about the bond issues and all that, it got me sidetracked. But you were talking about the Libertarian Party. I'm just going to say this. If the Libertarian Party cannot make a go and fund and display a realistic candidate in this day and age, they need to disband.
Amen.
Because if you can't make a go of a realistic candidate now with the two parties that are out there, you suck.
I think that can be said for 2020, and they basically have disbanded from the party in 2020. I mean, we had the worst attacks on American freedom in at least in modern times, save maybe something during the Civil War, but we had the worst attacks on freedom, and the Libertarian Party basically didn't say boo about lockdowns or mandates. I mean, it was the opportunity for the Libertarian Party to shine in 2020, and they were just a big fat dud, and that's why I'm thrilled it's been taken over by different people.
Well, but that spotlight has only gotten brighter.
Yeah.
Over the last 2 years, you really got to shine now. If you can't shine now, you just need to quit.
Well, I'm telling you, I kind of smell a rat with Alex Jones and Steven Crowder and Ben Shapiro putting out clips about how they're anti-libertarian. They used to be libertarian, but they're not libertarian anymore. And that Alex Jones calling the Libertarian Party a cancer. I swear. I smell a rat. I smell like some GOP cash going out there because they realize people are fed up with the Republican Party, who has stood down. I've got a great quote about that today, but I think you're right. I think this is the time for libertarians to shine, and I think the GOP and the Democratic Party, they want to make sure that people are not attracted to this group at all of true freedom fighters, and so they're going to denigrate them at every turn. I wouldn't be surprised if Steven Crowder and Alex Jones' segment on being anti-libertarian was actually not a paid promotion by the GOP.
Oh, I'm sure that it is. I have no doubt that it probably is. Well, I mean, that's...
You know, one thing people need to understand about the Libertarian Party, too, you know, it looks like Dave Smith, who is a comedian, he's an incredibly sharp guy. He looks like he will be their nominee for president in 2024. I'm under no illusion he's going to win. He's a very smart, very entertaining guy, and I'm hoping he can make some waves. But the Libertarian Party is at least smart in the fact that they are running a ton of people for local offices, and they realize there is not going to be a top-down change to this country. There is going to have to be a bottom-up change, and people should be looking for real freedom people, because we saw it's not the federal government is just lost as of right now. We saw mayors, city councils, school boards enacting these policies of total abandonment of any kind of personal choice or freedom or anything like that. And the Libertarian Party is very focused on running people for city councils, running for mayors, running for, statewide offices. And this is where I hope they really make some inroads, because in the end, I think our federal government is insolvent, and it's probably going to, I'm going to want to find a state that's run by people who care about freedom.
Well, and I agree with you. It's got to be on the ground, the local. All politics is local, as the old saying says. And that's where they will make their growth. They're not going to grow attacking Washington.
Yeah,
because Washington is too. That's like trying to attack, you know, the fortified force. I mean, it's just not.
Yeah, the system is just so rigged. We've talked endlessly about how the game is played. They won't let third parties or any other parties into debates, and that's particularly that's after Ross Perot's good showing in 1992. They said, "Uh-oh, we better not let anybody outside of the two-party system have a stage, because people might listen to it." So that the game is rigged against them. But it's going to be interesting anyway. I think we're approaching a point. We're a long past point. We need to start shoring up our local, our towns, our communities, and our states against the federal government. We need a buffer between us and this federal government. The enemy to freedom is coming from Washington, D.C., not from Russia, not from China, not from Iran. I've been saying it since the day I came on air. The biggest threat to your freedom is in Washington, D.C., not in Beijing. And so when people finally wrap their minds around that, you may see some real freedom fighters taking state offices, and that would be a positive sign.
Yep.
Hey, thanks, Rob. Appreciate the call, man. All right. Bye. All right, when we come back, I'm going to get into a little bit of this real estate stuff. Well, I'll tell you what, let me go ahead and do this here. This is I'll do this before I get into my quotes. I'm telling you, something's about to break. And this 10-year bond is just saying that. The yield curve has got a huge inversion, which means that interest rates on bonds that are shorter maturity are much higher than longer range maturity. I'm not sure what the spreads are between like the 2-year and the 10-year. I don't want to get into all that, but it's a sign of a recession because people are demanding more money to loan for short periods of time, and nobody's interested in loaning for long periods of time. But there was this story about the housing market, and this is obviously a bellwether for the U.S. economy because there's so many jobs and everything that are around real estate. Existing home sales fell again for the 7th month. This is the first time this has happened since, if anyone remembers this time, October of 2007. This is the longest streak of month-over-month sales declines since October of 2007. And with the 10-year going to 3.6, which is the basis, kind of the indicator of where mortgage rates are going, I'll have to look and see what 30-year mortgages are at right now. But if you've got a 10-year that is popping like this, the mortgage rates are going to be going higher and higher, and we know that makes homes more and more affordable. You're going to have less activity, and this is not over, not by a long shot. So the cracks are starting to show something is going to break. We're going to have our Lehman moment, which was refers to when Lehman Brothers all of a sudden overnight basically said, oh, my God, we're insolvent. Somebody please come help us. And for some reason, they let Lehman Brothers go under while a bunch of the other banks got bailed out. But we're going to have that moment. A lot of people are targeting this fall. I've heard as early as October of this year, they believe that something pretty drastic is going to happen in the credit markets. It's going to be that kind of thing, like the Lehman moment where people go, uh-oh, what? Biden and the Federal Reserve, CNBC telling us everything's going to be okay. We might have a recession towards the end of next year. They're still saying these kinds of things. We're very close to that moment where people go, uh-oh, this is going to be a problem. We'll see. I'll be right back. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. I am not in any way, shape, or form paid by the Libertarian Party. I'm not a representative of the Libertarian Party. I did join when the Mises Caucus, the Ron Paul faction of the party, took over because I was interested. I want to support them. They don't have any money to pay me anyway. The Libertarian Party, notoriously bereft of cash because of the conservative movement. The Republicans have been so effective in convincing you that... you know, Libertarian Party is not worth anything. They're just out there, as Alex Jones said the other day, they're just there. They're run by a bunch of Democrats. This is what Alex Jones said with basically no basis in fact whatsoever, particularly of the current Libertarian Party. I'm going to read you some tweets from the Libertarian Party and let you make up your own mind. If you really care about your gun rights, here is what the Libertarian Party tweeted out. We have one response to those who insist we don't, quote, need, unquote, a certain type of firearm. Our rights aren't dependent on what you or any politician think we need. That's the Libertarian Party. What's the Republican Party? Oh, it's okay to register your, make everybody register your guns. Oh, it's okay to ban bump stocks. It's okay to have the ATF running roughshod over Americans' gun ownership. Republicans are fine with all of these things. Republicans were in charge when the National Guard went door to door during Hurricane Katrina to confiscate weapons from law-abiding citizens just hoping to protect their homes. That's the Republican Party. Libertarian Party is there's just no wiggle room with the Libertarian Party on gun rights. So pick your side there. Libertarian Party tweeted out, if you want to see what conservatives will be fighting for in 10 years, just look at what the left is promoting today. Clay had sent me a tweet from Marjorie Taylor Greene, who's blasting out 21 Senate Republicans who just voted for some climate change refrigerant regulation. They're going to do away with, you know, the latest iteration of Freon or whatever it's called because it's harming the environment. So there were 21 Republican senators just voted along lines with this. You can check out Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know enough about the bill or exactly what's involved, but she did mention that she did name the 21 Republican senators, and Roger Wicker and Cindy Hyde Smith were on this thing. So if you want to see what conservatives will be fighting for in 10 years, just look at what the left is promoting today. There's your Republican Party right there. Ron Paul said this. He is a man who sat in Congress for quite a period of time. He said, on the surface, the two political parties fight each other. Beneath the surface, very little difference. And then there was this. This was a thread put out by the Libertarian Party. What I love about them is they're not mincing any words these days. They say, you have to drive an electric car while they fly private jets. You have to send your kids to public school while theirs attend private school. You have to fight and fund their wars while they profit off those wars. You have to pay taxes while they get rich off your taxes. You have to stay at home and wear a mask while they attend baseball games and dine at expensive restaurants unmasked. You have to live with a broken immigration system while they send the National Guard to kick migrants out of Martha's Vineyard. You have to drive on crumbling roads and bridges while they give billions to foreign countries. You have to get harassed by the TSA at the airport while they support Al-Qaeda in Yemen. You have to deal with inflation while they live free of its consequences. And they finish with this. There are only two classes in America worth acknowledging. One, the parasitic government class, and two, everyone else. The parasitic government class destroys everything it touches and produces nothing, not even the very security whereby its wretched existence is justified. So make up your own minds. You can keep banging your heads against the wall. we might have to have Stephen Dutroska back on. And I am actually supportive of this. If you want to take over the Republican Party with some real people who want to shrink government, some libertarian-minded people, some more Rand Pauls, some more Thomas Masseys, if you want to do that, some more Ron Pauls, that's absolutely fine. It might even be the best strategy, but you're not even trying that. Republicans are not even doing that. You have just celebrated, and many people still genuflect, the Messiah, Donald Trump, who spent more money, who was over a government that spent more money than any president in the history of the world. Of course, Joe Biden will eclipse that, just like Obama eclipsed Bush, Trump eclipsed Obama. So there's no accountability. Republicans have absolutely no accountability whatsoever for their people. They like words. They love words. They love rallies. They love jokes. They love trolling. For actions, they don't care. There's no accountability for that whatsoever. And the one quote of the day that I have today is Nietzsche. And this, boy, if this isn't one of the most accurate ones I've ever done, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. Sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. That's what, that's Americans living in quite the illusion. There was a Market Watch question. Market Watch is a financial website that I go to check rates, and it's not especially impressive. It's very kind of mainstream Wall Street stuff. Analyst says everything's going to be fine. Analyst says inflation's peaked. You know, all this kind of stuff. There's some dissenting opinions on there, but it's just typical Wall Street stuff. But they've got a segment where people, I guess, send in questions. It's always interesting. It's usually about families and money. My aunt is not thinking clearly. I think she has dementia. She's leaving money to my sister, but my sister never helped take care of her. Should I sue? You know, stuff like this, where we just show that, you know, money just destroys relationships. But there was a Market Watch question on there today that just, I don't know, gave me a little bit of a chuckle. I'm not laughing at this old lady. But this person says, I assume this is a lady. Maybe I'm wrong. Market Watch question is, she never explained anything. I'm a senior citizen and lost $100,000 in the stock market this year. Can I sue my financial advisor? I'll tell you what. I've recounted the story before. I was a financial advisor. And I was a financial advisor going into the financial crisis. And I was a Chicken Little. I was way early. But I was watching what was going on, the debt levels and things. The housing market was just going berserk. You had janitors in L.A. buying three investment homes for $500,000 each. And I said, oh, my gosh, this is going to be a problem. This is not going to end well. But to be a financial advisor and make any money, you need to be smiling and dialing and getting people to open up their pocketbooks and put money into the market. And I sat down with my regional director. I said, I can't do that. There's just no way I can stomach. I just don't think this is a good time to buy. This is a bizarre market. The P.E. ratios, the price-to-earnings ratios were high. The debt was accelerating. The housing market had gone insane. I just knew there was a reckoning. Of course, this was in 2004, 2005. I was struggling with this. Of course, I wasn't making any money for the firm by telling, you know, clients, hey, you want to open an account with me? We're just going to sit in cash and not do anything because I think this market is ripe for a downturn. So I couldn't do it, and I could not stomach. There was no way I could stomach losing my clients' money. Financial advisors as an industry, you need to be very careful of them. I wrote a book called Beware of Your Financial Advisor. You can find it on Amazon if you're so inclined. But the incentives of most financial advisors, and there's some great ones out there. It's a little bit like the medical field. Vast majority of them are pretty horrible, I'll be honest with you. But there are some that are good. Everyone will think to themselves, well, mine's good because I've made a lot of money last year. Well, yeah, everybody's a genius in an up market. What's your financial advisor telling you right now? Hang in there. There was actually a clip on this radio station. I think it was during one of the CBS Market Watches where they broke in and did the news. And I heard someone say, if you don't need your money for the next year and a half to 2 years, it's best to just stand pat. Now, what is that saying? What are they saying when they say, if you don't need your money for the next 2 years, then just don't do anything. You'll be okay with it. What they're saying is, the market's going to go down maybe pretty heavily for the next 2 years, so don't try to get any of your money out. Well, if they know that the market, or if they think that the market's going to go down substantially, why wouldn't you do something? Why wouldn't you sell out of the market, have your cash, and then buy back in 2 years from now? Does that make any sense to anybody? You understand what I'm saying? If they're telling you, hey, don't expect to take any of your money out in the next 2 years because you're going to have a lot less. Well, then that seems like that's the time to act. See, here's the trick, though. Financial advisors, financial firms, they don't make any money on your cash. They only make money when you're invested. You have to be in the market for them to draw fees off of your account. If you're just sitting in a cash account, you're generating no income from them. So what this financial advice that went out, and it wasn't from WYAB itself, it was from this thing we've attached ourselves to at CBS. It just happens. Everybody's got to carry some news. CBS just, you know, since we got in the contract, they've gotten markedly worse. But this was somebody telling you, oh, you got to keep your money in the market. You got to go down with the ship, but it'll come back. It'll come back. You might want to make a call to some Japanese citizens. You know, the U.S. market, they've been righter than I've been right. It does keep coming back. But there's a time where that won't happen, and Japan has already experienced this. Their market peaked in 1990, and I do not believe it has ever regained the highs of 1990, 32 years. If you invested in 1990, if CBS Market Watch that comes on our air had told the Japanese citizens in 1990, hey, stay in the market, just for a couple of years, looks like we're ready for a downturn, but then everything will be great. Well, they were about 30 years off in their prediction. If you're investing, if you were a Japanese investor back in 1990. Anyway, this woman, I feel terrible for her. She's lost $100,000. Most people do not understand the market. I don't know if she's got a good financial or a bad financial advisor, but I don't know you're going to sue anybody. You've taken your own risks in the market. Just be aware of how, the moral of this story is, as a former financial advisor, know how your advisor makes money. Understand the commission system. You just ask them, how do you make money on my account? And how much have you made in the past year or 2 years? I'm going to tell this story again real quick. I told you I've got 2 hours to fill today. We're going to get to Joe Biden's speech next hour. I had a client at one point that moved his money out of an account that I had with a partner. We had like a group. We managed people's money, and this suddenly we realized there was like a, I can't remember what it was, I think it was around $600,000 redemption. This client never called us. They never told us they were unhappy, anything like that, but they withdrew a huge amount of money. Now, we don't want that. I mean, if you're a financial advisor, and particularly if you're managing money long-term, which is what we tried to do, just get paid a little bit rather than big commissions, but get paid a little bit each year to try to make good moves for a client. Anyway, this money started disappearing. We called the client and said, hey, what's up? You're taking like $600,000 out of your account. What are you doing? And the client, you know, they were a little embarrassed. They didn't want to tell us they were leaving us, but they had met with a, air quotes here in the studio, financial advisor. And I say air quotes there because it was basically an annuity salesman. And this annuity salesman was selling them on a product, on an annuity product. It was called an indexed annuity. And the way they sell these things is that you get all the upside of the market, but no downside. Now, for anybody who understands money, you understand there's no free lunch. There's no guaranteed returns without risk. The more returns you get, the bigger risk you're probably going to take. So we said, oh, okay, can you tell us what the product is that that they're going to put that money into? And the client got back to us and said, yeah, it's this. They went and found their prospectus that told them what this annuity was. And we did a little bit of research. Do you know they met with this, air quotes here in the studio again, financial advisor. Again, he was just an annuity salesman. They met with this guy for about an hour. And we looked at this product that this guy was trying to sell this guy. Not trying. He was selling it to him. The commission on this $600,000 annuity that this other guy had sold our client, the commission on that for a one-hour meeting was, anyone, around 110 $1,000. It was a 15% commission. It was over $600,000 to make that math work. It was around $110,000 of commission. Now, the only way that someone can earn a commission like that is if there were things within that contract, within that product that they were selling to that client that was going to extract huge fees out of that guy's account. And we found out this man was a senior citizen. He was in his upper 60s. And essentially, if he had taken any of his money out in like the first 20 years, he was going to pay huge penalties. Ultimately, we explained this to him, and he did not end up buying this annuity. I can't even remember if he brought his money back to us or not, or if he just sat on it. We never saw him again. It wasn't out of spite that he was leaving us that we told him this fact, explained to him exactly what was being sold to him, but it was just about not wanting to see somebody get absolutely screwed by somebody who was just a salesperson and not in any way, shape, or form some kind of an advisor for the benefit of your finances. So understand, it is incumbent upon all of you, doesn't matter where you invest, understand the kind of fees that you're paying, any penalties if you need your money at some point that is not on the schedule of the firm that you're investing with. There's a lot of trap doors in the world of financial advice. There you go, a PSA for today. I'll be right back. Afraid. I was petrified. I kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. But then I spent so many nights just thinking how you'd done me wrong. I grew strong. I learned how to get along. And so all right, we've only got a few minutes left in this hour, and then next hour we're going to get into Biden's speech. It was truly horrific. It really was bad. It's not a surprise to anybody. We're used to that. Every time he opens his mouth, it's a train wreck. But this was especially bad to me. I'm going to finish up on this financial advisor. So many people now, you know, I don't know if the market goes down. I don't know if the Fed's got more tricks up its sleeve. Maybe there'll be signs something like the financial crisis, things will start to break, and maybe the Fed's got a tool to fix it. Not fix it, excuse me. That is the wrong word to use. To kick the can down the road a little bit further. I don't see it, but I don't know everything. They've had a lot more tricks than I ever thought. The last 13 years have been absolutely amazing to me to watch. 14 years of money printing and things, and we're just now really seeing some pretty devastating consequences of it to the American people. So I don't know. Don't trust me for timing. But a lot of people are going to be making decisions with finances, I believe. And I'll tell you a little bit about how financial firms, so sometimes you'll, and all apologies, they're a good financial advisor. If you're comfortable with your guy and he seems to be looking out for you and he's, you know, doesn't feel like he's harvesting your account constantly for commissions, churning stocks, doing all those kinds of things, there are great financial advisors out there. And I'd like to have one. I know a couple of guys. But what would happen, sometimes you'll have financial firms, they say, well, we're independent. We shop among several different companies to find the best investment. We're not saddled with one. Well, that's true. And I'll tell you, just the inside of a boardroom in a financial firm, at least my experience was, we would have wholesalers for things, particularly like annuities, any kind of a investment product that paid a big commission to advisors. And much like a pharmaceutical sales rep, these companies send out salespeople to meet with offices full of financial advisors. And they'll talk about the benefits of their thing. They'll make it sound like it's appropriate for everybody. No financial product is appropriate for everybody, but they'll give you all the highlights of it. They'll kind of minimize any of the downsides of, you know, excessive fees to the client, that kind of stuff. But nobody's really paying attention until they get to the part about commissions. And I have watched roomfuls of people that I liked, men and women. Many of them very, very Christian people. They're very, profess to be very big in their faith. So I don't know if this is just human nature or character flaw or whatever it is, but I did not participate. What would happen is they would come in and one of these annuity wholesalers would come out and say, look, if you sell our annuity, it does all this for your client. And then invariably the question would go, and if you sell this, you get a, and they would name the commission rate. It could be anywhere from 6 to 15%. And so what I would see people do at live time in the boardroom or immediately after, they would go to their desk, they would look at their book of business, all their clients, and they would start using their calculator, not not to see, you know, how good can I do for my client on this? No, they would look and they would say, oh, this person's about to roll over an IRA. It's got $184,000 in it. At 15%, my commission would be. And that's what they were figuring out. I didn't hear a lot of talk about all the benefits of this particular product or how it was really going to help somebody secure their wealth or any of those kinds of things. They went out and they got the calculators. They started going through their book trying to figure out how much could I earn. This product that this guy just told us about, if I went out and took my book of business and I could find 10 clients and get $1 million put into this, oh my gosh, I'm going to make $150,000 in the next couple of months. That's the way it operated. Again, there's some good financial advisors out there, no doubt about that. Some guys that will really look out for your money. They understand the markets are incredibly complex. They're difficult. They're difficult even for the best advisors. But if you've got somebody who's got a good heart, they're looking out for you, then that's worth an awful lot. It's like a good mechanic. But I'm just warning you, if you're picking one out of the phone book and just running out to somebody who hangs a shingle as a financial advisor, watch your wallets. Be right back.
Right into this world, all alone. God takes your soul, you're on your own.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Usually at this time, I would be introducing a representative from Americans for Prosperity, but they are out setting brush fires on the economic liberty landscape here in the state of Mississippi. This is an organization you do need to support. They're big into grassroots. And they get into some pretty, you know, deep policy stuff, but they're out there trying to get bureaucrats out of the way of Mississippi businesses. They are mostly focused in on, and I think people get upset with them that maybe they don't fight the culture war and stuff, but they're focused in on economic things. And the state of Mississippi needs that more than any other state in the country, just about. I don't know, where are we these days? Between Alabama and West Virginia? And we all kind of jockey for the bottom, but we're dang near close to it. Even with this supermajority red state, this Republican supermajority that we have here in this state, we cannot get out of our own way. Americans for Prosperity is out there fighting the fight to try to get the government out of the way to free the economic potential that exists within the people of the state. So you can find them, Americans for Prosperity, I think it's Americans for Prosperity-Mississippi on Facebook is where they interact with people most. You'll also see some contact numbers there. You can contact these people. The meetings are great. I love going to the meetings. Meet a lot of like-minded people. People have got different issues they care about, but it's just, you know, it's nice to get around people who are wanting to fight for some level of freedom. There's not a whole lot of organizations out there. I know people like to go to the grip and grin of the Republican Party. Makes them feel special. Makes them feel like they're part of the club. No offense to those people. Those may be enjoyable events. I don't know. I feel like I might have to take a shower after one of those things, but I'm not making any friends today, am I? Americans for Prosperity does, they work the political system, and God love them. They got more patience than I do, but they're more effective than I am. So that's a good thing. So check out Americans for Prosperity Mississippi on Facebook. Look for ways to get involved or to help them try to get good people elected so they can get the government out of the way of local businesses here. All right, this is maybe bad form radio. I don't know. I don't generally do these things. I pull clips. I take YouTube videos and convert them to MP3, and then I put them into a Audacity program, and I cut them up, and I take cuss words out. I mean, I put a lot of research into these things. I listen to things. I take notes. I'm not doing that with Joe Biden's speech today. I listened to about the first minute and a half of it. It aggravated me so much that I knew, because it was late last night, about 11 o'clock, 10:30. I knew I wasn't going to be able to sleep if this man worked me up into a tizzy like I knew he was going to with his speech. So we're just going to listen to this thing live, and I don't know how much of it I can stomach or how much time I want to spend on it. I'll just judge this by mood. But we're going to get into it for a second. But I'm going to come at this probably from a very different spot. You know, what you have to understand is what you're about to hear. Many of the national Republicans, and even some in the state here, I would imagine, they're on board with what Biden is saying. Oh, they don't like Biden, and they'll criticize him for this and criticize him for that. But when it comes to hostility against Russia, Marsha Blackburn is one of the most blood-soaked monsters out there. I've just heard her saying things about Russia that is just, she's champing at the bit for World War III, not to mention the Lindsey Graham, the neocon wing of the Republican Party. And when you talk to a lot of Republicans, they will just talk about how Russia's this threat and it's, you know, NATO is this shining force. It's just for democracy and human rights. It's just wrong. It's wrong. And so I'm probably going to say some things. I may even anger Republicans here in my opposition to this brain-addled, corrupt creature that has infested, parasitically infested our White House. Before I do that, I'll go back to my quote of the day today from Nietzsche. He said, sometimes people don't want to hear the truth because they don't want their illusions destroyed. And if your illusion, if you are currently living still in the illusion that the United States is this great force for good around the world, protecting democracy and freedom among all of its peoples, then I'm about to destroy that illusion. I'm just going to warn you. I know you don't want that because you want to believe. We all want to believe. America had such a... We could have been such a leader of the world, showing them the success of true free market capitalism and personal freedom. We could have really been the shining example. Instead, we saddled ourselves with this political class. And I watch people line up behind one side or the other, one wing of the same bird, constantly. And it didn't have to be this way. These people have looted the entire planet, led by the psychopaths in power in the United States. Unfortunately, it's true. The State Department, the U.S. State Department, is up to no good. Not for humanity and not for you. And you know, I was thinking about all of the mass tragedies. This is something libertarians talk about a lot because we really want to drive home the point that, you know, it is governments that are responsible for the vast majority of misery around the world. Now, there can be natural disasters, a couple of bad earthquakes going on right now, got a hurricane brewing. There's all kinds of tragic things that happen. But when you look at man-made tragedies, they are almost always on scale so much worse at the hands of governments. It's not people versus people. People talk about wars and they say, that's just human nature. I'm telling you, I don't believe it is. If it was human nature, why are two subdivisions in Madison not fighting each other for some level of resources or road access? Or why don't two businesses go to war over parking spaces? Why don't states war with each other when it comes to who gets the Nissan plant? No, most people will cooperate. They will compete. We are a competitive race. We want things. We want a good quality of life. We'll compete. But I don't believe that we have this just inherent violence in us. And so they'd say that, well, you know, war is just, that's just a condition of humanity. No, it's not. The condition is that we continue to elect people who destroy lives. And I was looking at, before I came on air today, I was thinking this thought through, and I said, you know, what leaders have been responsible for the most deaths around the world? Because we are at the cusp of a mass casualty event. It's already happening in Ukraine. But what Joe Biden does in his speech here is poke that, stoke that fire, which is what he's been doing since the day he came in office. Now, this is nothing new. During the Trump administration, he had Secretary of State running our U.S. State Department by the name of the formerly completely bloated Mike Pompeo. He's lost a lot of weight. Maybe he's going through one of these thinner things, you know, the Stephen King movie. We can only hope. But during Pompeo's reign as a Secretary of State, he was also denigrating Russia constantly, provoking them with tons of sanctions, and, as I've mentioned many times before, shipping deadly weapons, offensive, lethal weaponry into Ukraine during Mike Pompeo's reign as Secretary of State under Donald Trump. So this is not new. But I was looking at, you know, the world leaders that we, you know, top of head, you can think of, were responsible for mass casualties. And I looked and I just found a site, only clicked on one. It said like the top eight world leaders responsible for the most deaths. Some of the familiar names were on there: Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler. But there were a couple on there that I didn't really know the names of. One of them was, I think, like a Kim Jong somebody. So I assume it was North Korea. I really didn't even read these things. But they were responsible for like 1.2 million deaths. They made a rank of the top eight. I think the first couple of them on this list were responsible for somewhere between 1 and 2.5 million deaths. That might be like the bottom three or four of this group of eight. Then you get up into the big numbers like Stalin, and I believe it was 40 million. Hitler, they lay 50 million on. Pol Pot was a piker. I think he might have been 5 million. But those first three or four were only somewhere between 1 and 2 million. You know who eclipses those bottom rungs on the top eight mass murderers in history? The tag team of Bush 1, Clinton, Bush 2, Obama, Trump, and Biden. Now, this is, again, going back to Nietzsche. People don't want to hear the truth because it might shatter their illusions that the United States is this great global force and that American leadership will lead us all to prosperity and freedom. And it's just simply not true. We've been run by psychopaths in foreign policy for decades now, and the deaths that are at the hands of American interventionism around the world number in the millions, more than some Korean dictator. More than one of the Japanese emperors. And this is really lost in history, particularly for Americans. We just refuse to believe these things. Yet millions and millions of people have died just in the war on terror. Not to the benefit of any Americans. Well, I won't say not any Americans. There's certainly people that make a ton of money off of these wars. But for the vast majority of us, we just pay the bill. We send our sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters halfway around the world to fight and die for this empire that is empowering and enriching those at the very top. So the modern presidents, as I've said many times, should all be in jail for war crimes. Joe Biden may need the longest sentence ever for what he's doing when it comes to Ukraine and Russia right now. So when I come back, we'll take a break. We're going to start listening to this speech. I won't put it off any longer. We're going to start listening to the hypocrisy. The abject hypocrisy and disingenuousness of this mental patient who is running the U.S. right now. I'll be right back.
I tear my heart open, I sew myself shut. My weakness is that I can't do much. And my scars remind me that the past is real. I tear my heart open.
All right, let's get into this thing. I think I suffer the the insult of being anti-American on this show. That usually comes from the right when you call out how dangerous our government is to the world. You're considered anti-American. Even the founding fathers told you, you can love your country and hate your government. That's a very patriotic thing to do. The founding fathers not very fond of government. And they would be ashamed to see what ours has grown into, particularly with its entangling alliances around the world. This is where we find ourselves, and so we're going to listen to this mental patient in his address to the UN. I'm looking at the video here, some of the nut jobs there. They're all masked up there. I saw there was a COVID outbreak after the Queen's funeral. Oh, good stuff.
Thank you. Mr. President, Mr. Secretary General, my fellow leaders, in the last year, our world has experienced great upheaval, a growing crisis in food insecurity.
Now, understand that every single one of these things he mentions was all created. These were not acts of God. These were created by the people in this chamber.
Record heat, floods, and droughts. COVID-19.
Now, those are acts of God. I spoke too soon. Man's not creating the climate.
Inflation and a brutal, needless war. A war chosen by one man, to be very blunt.
Nope. This is a war chosen by the West. This is a war 30 years in the making by the West. This is not one man. He will try to implicate Vladimir Putin in this. Now, Putin authorized the move into Ukraine. We've talked at length about that. But this is the West's war on Russia. Make absolutely no mistake about that.
Let us speak plainly. A permanent member of the United Nations Security Council invaded its neighbor.
Now, isn't that rich? And this is not new. this idea of consternation against a nation for invading another sovereign nation. Now, Joe Biden sits atop a government that is well on record for invading at least six nations just over the past 20 years. This does not include the conflicts we're involved in places like Somalia, Niger, other places like that, but full-fledged invasions, and the fact that we actually even overthrew during Vice President Biden's term with the State Department of Hillary Clinton, they overthrew, it was not an invasion, technically, of Ukraine back in 2014, but they overthrew the democratically elected government of Ukraine back in 2014. And, you know, the thing is that the rest of the world knows this stuff. Americans don't. That's what's very strange about it. But when you hear these speeches, I would love to be inside the heads of some of the people listening to this speech from other parts of the world just to think, how dare you? We don't like the fact that Russia has invaded Ukraine. But if there's anybody to preach to us to condemn the invasion of another sovereign country, it is not the United States. We have no moral authority on that topic.
Attempted to erase a sovereign state from the map.
Again, we overthrew the government of Ukraine, a sovereign country with a democratically elected government. We overthrew their government. We overthrew the government of Iraq. We overthrew the government of Afghanistan. We overthrew the government of Iran back in 1953. We've been doing this for decades.
Russia has shamelessly violated the core tenets of the United Nations Charter. No more important than the clear prohibition against countries taking the territory of their neighbor by force.
I mean, am I insane? They violated the clear tenets of the international order. You don't go into another country and take territory there by force. Is this not what is almost like a hobby for the United States? This is what we do. We've almost perfected it, at least in invading and then prolonging wars for decades now. But how in the world does Joe Biden... Now, he doesn't know what's going on, but he knows he's lying. He knows he's being as hypocritical as you can possibly be.
Again, just today, President Putin has made overt nuclear threats against Europe and a reckless disregard for the responsibilities of the non-proliferation regime.
And what Putin said was, essentially, our position is very clear. We will not use nuclear weapons unless the sovereignty, if we believe that through a nuclear attack on us, or if we believe that the sovereignty of the Russian state is at risk. And Putin knows that the sovereignty of the Russian country is at risk. You've got the entire Western world aligned against Russia. What are they supposed to think?
Now, Russia's calling up more soldiers to join the fight. And the Kremlin is organizing a sham referendum to try to annex parts of Ukraine, an extremely significant violation of the UN Charter.
Now, I remember something called the Surge. Do you remember in, I think it was Afghanistan, we might have done one in Iraq too, the Surge. So we've built up troops. When things weren't going swimmingly, we called up a bunch more troops and we had a troop surge. You remember the Surge, don't you? Because Republicans just loved it. Oh, they loved it. Look what we're doing. We're getting serious now and conquering other sovereign countries half a world away. We are surging on them. We're turning the tide of the war. And this is not to mention also that we overthrew the government of Ukraine. I mean, this is weird to me, to be honest with you. It's weird that we get away with this stuff.
This world should see these outrageous acts for what they are. Putin claims he had to act because Russia was threatened. But no one threatened Russia. And no one other than Russia sought conflict.
Does anybody believe this? Now, I'm learning Russian. I'm not on the take from the Libertarian Party. I'm not on take from the Russian government. For 30 years, NATO has been encircling Russia. And I can keep saying this. And now we overthrew the government in Ukraine in 2014. It's been 8 years. They sat there for 8 years with this hostile government in Ukraine, lobbing bombs, murdering 14,000 ethnic Russians. I mean, I guess you draw a line in the sand somewhere. I don't know if Putin was sitting around going, when they hit 14,000, that's it. That seems like a level of a restraint to me. And again, I'll just bring this up. If China overthrew the Canadian government, and with the Canadian government the way it is these days, it wouldn't be a very heavy lift. Trudeau may be a rank-and-file communist himself right now. But if the Chinese were to, with complete knowledge by the West and the United States, if they overthrew the government of Canada, our neighbor, and let's just say there's a lot of Americans that live and people that were born in the United States that have immigrated to Canada to work up there. That's a pretty easy border for two Western countries that are friendly with each other to go back and forth. Imagine the Chinese government overthrowing the government of Canada and they start murdering Americans in Canada. They don't like those Americans that still have that last vestige of some level of thought about freedom there, so they just start lobbing bombs into Ontario, where there's a stronghold, where there's a bunch of ethnic Americans there. How do you think that would be received by the United States? Would we sit here and go, look at that? Boy, Chinese are next to us now, and they're killing Americans over there in Canada. That's weird. And then we would just ignore it, right? This is what we expect Vladimir Putin to have done. Look, the Americans have overthrown the government in Ukraine, and they're murdering people who are Russian descent in Ukraine. I guess we'll just sit here and take it. We'll just watch. And as soon as Ukraine gets NATO, we'll be completely surrounded. That'll be wild. That's what we're saying Vladimir Putin should have done. That should have been his strategy. It was just wait until the noose was completely around the neck and the oxygen supply was being cut off.
In fact, we warned it was coming.
Because we created this event. We warned you this was coming. I've told you what American foreign policy is. American foreign policy is like a child. You know this when you're a little kid, and you stick your finger right up against somebody's, like, the side of their eye. You don't touch them. You just put it right there by their eye, and they go, hey, knock it off, stop. I'm not touching you. It's a free country. And they just keep that finger right there. You go, come on, man, stop. That's bugging me. I'm not touching you. It's a free country. I can do whatever I want to. I'm not touching you. And then finally, the person that you're pestering the crap out of slaps your hand away, and the person with that's been sticking the finger in someone's face runs off and goes, Mom! He hit me. That is American foreign policy, particularly in this case with Russia.
With many of you, we work to try to avert it. Putin's own words make his true purpose unmistakable. Just before he invaded, Putin asserted, and I quote, Ukraine was created by Russia and never had, quote, real statehood. And now we see attacks on schools, railway stations, hospitals.
You know, does anybody know what's going on in Yemen right now? This is a war the U.S. is intimately involved in with our good friends, those peace and love Saudis. The largest humanitarian crisis on the planet right now. Huge cholera outbreaks. The Saudis, with the help of the United States, has been bombing hospitals. And schools, and wedding parties, fun targets like those. I don't know how many schools and hospitals and other civilian targets have been targeted in Afghanistan and in Iraq and in Libya and in Syria, where the United States was actually paying radical jihadists to go in and destroy the country of Syria. There is such zero moral authority to make this speech.
One, on centers of Ukrainian history and culture. In the past, even more horrifying evidence of Russia's atrocity and war crimes. Mass graves uncovered in Izium. Bodies, according to those who excavated those bodies, showing signs of torture. This war is about extinguishing Ukraine's right to exist as a state, plain and simple, and Ukraine's right to exist as a people.
We weren't real fond of Ukraine's right to exist with the government that they had chosen in 2014. We just stuck our guys in there. We just overthrew their government and stuck our guys in there. We have such regard. We have such regard for national sovereignty.
Whoever you are, wherever you live, whatever you believe, that should make your blood run cold. That's why 141 nations in the General Assembly came together and to unequivocally condemn Russia's war against Ukraine. The United States has marshaled massive levels of security assistance and humanitarian aid and direct economic support for Ukraine. More than $25 billion to date. Our allies and partners around the world have stepped up as well. And today, more than 40 countries represented in here have contributed billions of their own money and equipment to help Ukraine defend itself. The United States is also working closely with our allies and partners to impose costs on Russia, to deter attacks against NATO territory, to hold Russia accountable for the atrocities and war crimes. Because if nations can pursue their imperial ambitions without consequences, then we put at risk everything this very institution stands for.
If they can, what did he say? They can undertake their imperial actions. This is coming from the, I don't even want to say, he's not the leader of our country. I don't know what the figurehead, the talking head bobble that represents the largest empire that the world has ever seen. Oh, we make the Roman Empire look like nothing. You want to talk about imperial designs on the world? Go take a look at a map where U.S. troops are. In the 800, 900 military bases we have around the world, in the countries that we have toppled over decades. This topic gets so deep, even little Central and South American countries where we send mercenaries in to basically saddle these countries with debt, and then if they can't pay it back, we take their natural resources. I mean, the arm of the Western Empire has been long. We have built an empire. This is your imperial president right here calling out Vladimir Putin for invading a neighbor who was threatening it. A neighbor, somebody right on their doorstep. We don't invade countries on our doorstep that might actually be a threat to us. If the Chinese did take over Canada and were positioning troops on the border, that would be a cause for concern, might be a cause for war, and I would support that. I'm all about defending the United States. But we don't do that. We go halfway around the world. Strangely enough, to where a lot of natural resources are. Always seems to work out that way, doesn't it? And we start problems there. We invade countries there. I got to take a break. I'll be right back. Citizens from all over the world. This is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYEB. I don't know if I'm committing radio suicide here, because I know that people want to believe that the United States is this force for good. The politicians who love to hurl money at Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and United Technologies and AM General, They love to tell you that what your dollars are being spent for is to make for a world free for democracy and freedom. The truth is that none of those things are their goals. If they liked democracy and freedom, they would have no problem with the democratically elected government of Ukraine back in 2014. They wouldn't have sought to overthrow that if they loved democracy. Ukraine has significantly less freedom since the government we installed over there, too. They've banned all other political parties. They've shut down media outlets there. They're talking about having votes in some of these regions of ethnic Russians. They're going to vote to be part of the Russian Federation and not Ukraine. We love democracy, right? Well, not only are we threatening about these votes, but the Ukrainian government has come out and said that if you vote, doesn't even matter. I don't guess it matters which way you vote. Maybe that matters. But if you are a Ukrainian citizen of Russian descent and you vote in one of these things, it's 5 years in jail. This is the democracy, the freedom of this Ukrainian government that we're supposedly involved in this conflict with. So a lot of people probably take exception with the way I'm attacking this. They like that I'm attacking Biden. And let me say this about Joe Biden, too. His time in the White House has been short, although it seems imminently long. And to think that it's not even halfway over is almost too much to bear. But Joe Biden is, I would say, he's as responsible for all of these millions of deaths around the world as anybody else, because he's been in the political machine, a parasite on the American people, for 40 years voting for all of these wars. He's a neocon. You know, I've talked about the neocons, and the meaning that does not mean they're Republican conservatives. These neocons, these warmongers, are in both parties, and Hillary Clinton's a huge neocon warmonger. I believe she was the person at the State Department when we overthrew the government in Ukraine. And I just wish Americans would take off these blinders. This is propaganda. I don't know what Pravda said when the Russians rolled over some of their neighbors to install communism and some of these things as the Soviet empire was expanding. I'm sure Pravda said a lot of the same things that the American press tells you now. That this is all for the betterment of Mother Russia. And so we're subjected to, probably on steroids, the amount of propaganda that the Soviet citizen was under during the rule of the Soviet Union. I really don't know if I should continue to go on with this clip. It's almost redundant. This is pure projection. We're all kind of familiar with this. I didn't know it was a real thing until, I won't get too personal, but I got into an interpersonal conflict. I'll put it that way. And the other side of this conflict was accusing me of very strange things. Now, there's a lot of things you can probably accuse me of that I'm certainly no perfect human being. I've got my flaws, but the things they were accusing me of were so weird, and I just noticed that's exactly what they're doing. I had one guy in this conflict constantly calling me a con man. And knowing this guy, he was a con man. I found out he infested my life at one point, and I had the ability to talk to friends of his that he'd had for 20 years, family members, and they go, oh, this guy, he's such a con man. And so suddenly these charges were leveled at me. It's projection. And it's a weird psychological thing. And I think some people do it. Maybe they don't know. I'll say I'm mystified by the human mind. But when it comes to Joe Biden and American foreign policy, we blame every other country for doing exactly what we do. And this is probably my biggest problem with the right, although the situation has gotten markedly better, and I actually give Donald Trump a lot of credit for walking many Republicans and conservatives back from this idea that the U.S. should be running the world, that we should have boots on the ground everywhere to enforce freedom and enforce the democracy that we want. Of course, conservatives are... they're not quite really, they can't quite grasp the true idea of that, which is we should be minding our own business and let sovereign countries sort their own stuff out. Because I see the same conservatives who say, yeah, this is ridiculous. We shouldn't be in Iraq and Afghanistan. We need to bring our boys and girls home. But It's okay that Trump assassinates the general of Iran. It's okay that we blockade Venezuela. It's okay that we do military exercises on the southern border of North Korea, pantomiming the overthrow of their government. Those things are all American leadership because those are the things that Trump was for. It's like you're so close, but you just don't quite get it yet. You want to maintain the empire as long as your guy's running it and he gets to pick the targets. But so many Republicans, our own Roger Wicker, I know, is just, oof, oh, he's itching for this showdown with Russia. Now, he's not going to go fight it. I think Roger Wicker did time in the Air Force. I don't know if he ever saw combat, but he's an older gentleman now. He's not going to be one tasked to fight this thing. You are. Your kids, your grandkids, they'll be the people that suffer from these kinds of things. So the Republican Party, and one of probably maybe my biggest problem with the Republican Party is their warfare state. I don't like the left's welfare state. I don't like the right's warfare state. Gun to my head, I'd probably rather have a welfare state here at home. As bad as it is, it's horrible. Just destroys families. But given our money to the poor right here in this country, it's not as bad as the death and mayhem that we export around the world. They're close. They're both so equally bad. I am absolutely disgusted by the welfare system in this country. It has destroyed this country. But we're at the cusp right now of setting the world on fire. I hope I'm being Chicken Little. I hope I'm being hysterical about this. There won't be any nukes used. But what this speech yesterday was again, you have to understand, usually a lot of times when there's, when Reagan was facing off with Gorbachev, there were threats. At the same time, there were back-channel talks. During the Bay of Pigs, there were threats. There was a lot of really hostile language. There was still back-channel between the Kennedy administration and who was it, Brezhnev at the time. They were actually talking. There was a line of communication open between them to try to calm things down. But the rhetoric, the public rhetoric, this time we have all hostile public rhetoric, all hostile actions, sending weapons into Ukraine to be used to kill Russians with no back channel, no diplomacy going on whatsoever. So this feels to me more dangerous than the Bay of Pigs, more dangerous than the fall of the Soviet Union or the height of the Cold War. Because at least then there were some normal people there that were maybe trying to avoid some kind of a conflict. We now have a government that they seem itching for this conflict because they've had every opportunity in the world to turn away from it, to reverse it, to negotiate, to go to the peace talks. And every time they've sabotaged this. So this feels more dangerous to me than the Bay of Pigs did. Now, I wasn't alive during the Bay of Pigs. I'm sure the feeling there was pretty ominous, but at least with historically speaking, we know that they were still talking. It got pretty tense there. We might have been very close to an ugly exchange, but at least there was a bit of a fail-safe there. There's no fail-safe on this one. This is poking and prodding the Russians. It's been going on for 30 years, and they are accelerating it at this time right now. And Joe Biden is up in front of the UN just projecting, accusing Russia of everything that we do. You know, sanctions are an act of war. Technically, sanctions are known as an act of war. And we have been sanctioning Russia now for maybe a couple of decades. I don't know, but they've really been ramped up during the Trump administration. I don't know what Americans would think if the Chinese came in and said, you can't export any of your natural resources to Canada or to Mexico. Well, Mexico wants to buy our oil from the West Texas oil fields, and China says no. Nope. We will not allow it. And anybody who does business with the Americans in their attempt to ship oil to Mexico, we're going to sanction them as well. That's what the United States has been doing to Russia. Most notably during the Trump term, he would not allow Russians to sell their natural gas to Europe. They sanctioned the Nord Stream 2, this pipeline that great expense and effort went to build this thing to secure the energy needs of Europe, and Europe was a willing buyer of Russian fuel. The United States said, no, we won't let you do it. Look at the mess Europe is in right now. These have been acts of war all along. They're just not seen that way because we don't see nightly news bloodshed. I guess I got to take one break. I'll come back and finish up for whatever else. I don't know if there's anything left to be said. I'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees. So will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, I've only got about a minute left. The bottom line is this, and it's redundant here on this show. I apologize for repeating myself, but it's absolutely true. None of the things that are happening in this war in Ukraine are happening without NATO expanding onto Russia's doorstep over 30 years after promising not to do so. None of these things happening between Ukraine and Russia. We are not at the cusp of World War III if the Obama State Department doesn't go into Ukraine and overthrow their government and put in a hostile government right next door to Russia in 2014. None of these things happen if Donald Trump doesn't send deadly weapons into Ukraine to murder ethnic Russians. None of these things happen if we do not endlessly sanction Russia and China and any other country that we disagree with. None of these things happen if we wanted to be diplomatic about it and settle this thing and let ethnic Russians be with who they want to be or be autonomous outside of the clutches of the Nazi government in Ukraine. None of these things had to happen. This is not the actions of one crazed Vladimir Putin. This is the West's concerted effort to encircle and defeat Russia. It is the West's fault. This is why this is happening. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't.